So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text Number 10. Tatha chikshiram manam tam sapatnyastanyam jugam suruchi shrinvato ragyam shersham mahatikarvitam. Tata, thus, Chikirshamanam, the child of Dhruva, who is trying to get up, Tam, unto him, Sapatnya, of her co-wife, Suniti, Tanayam, son, Dhruvam, Dhruva, Suruchi, Queen Suruchi, Shrinvataha, while hearing, Ragya, of the king, Sa Irisham, with envy, Aho, said, Atikarvita, being too proud. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Saboya Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. While the child, Dhruva Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child. And with great pride she began to speak, so as to be heard by the king himself. Please repeat. When the child, Dhruva Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child. And with great pride, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. The king, of course, was equally affectionate toward both his sons, Uttama and Dhruva. So he had a natural inclination to take Dhruva as well as Uttama on his lap. But because of his favoritism towards his queen, Suruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj despite his feelings. King Uttanapada's feeling was understood by Suruchi, and therefore with great pride she began to speak about the king's affection for her. This is the nature of a woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favorite and is especially affectionate to her, she takes undue advantages. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as a family of Swayambhuva Manu. Therefore, it is concluded that the feminine nature of a woman is present everywhere. Om Magyanti Midandasya Gananjanam Salakayo Chakshura Vinitandina Tasmai Shri Guruva Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivashati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. So text 9. Ikada Suruchi Putram Ankam Arokya Lalayam Utsumam Narukshantam Juvan Raja Dayanandata. Once upon a time, King Uttanapada was patting the son of Suruchi Uttama, placing him on his lap. Dhruva Maharaj also trying to get up on the king's lap, but the king did not very much welcome him. When the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get up on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child, and with great pride she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. So here, a small 5-year-old boy, what was his fault? He just wanted some affection from his father and to climb on his lap. But due to the nature of his stepmother, Suruchi, she became envious that only my son should sit on the lap of my husband. I'm the favorite, and therefore my son should be given more attention than Dhruva, as I am given attention. Aspect of mine is very strong. My husband, and I'm his favorite, and my son. It becomes very strong, so much so that she becomes envious of a five-year-old boy who just wants some affection from his father. So Prabhupada is pointing out this is the nature of a woman. His feminine is present everywhere, even in the aristocratic family of Swayambhuva Manu. So he's concluding, it's there from the very beginning of creation, because the Swayambhuva Manu are the progenitors in the beginning of creation. So this is what we're dealing with in this material world. There's another king. Who was it? Was it Chitraketu? He was blessed by the Muni to have a child. And he said, you can have a child, but he would be a great source of happiness. Also, he'd be a great source of distress. Is that Chitraketu? Okay. So he had many wives, but he couldn't get any children. Then he got the blessings of the sage. He had a child, so he was completely absorbed in his child. After so long, he's got a child. He showed all of his affection. And he was so happy with the wife who gave the child. And all the other wives became so envious that he gives all the attention to the son and the main wife, his favorite. So they actually poisoned the child. They actually ganged together and they killed him. Their own stepson. So this is the nature of envy in this world. So it's not that men also don't have any bad qualities. They also have, see, my is very prominent for a woman. But the I and mine, the hamameti, is, I is stronger for a man. I am the controller and the pushrain. So anyway, the world is full of just bad qualities because it's reflecting from the spiritual world. So what is happiness in the spiritual world? Ladini Shakti, that's Krishna's pleasure point, so when it reflects in the material world, becomes known as Tapakari, that which gives misery. So what gives pleasure there, reflected in the material world, is actually becomes a source of misery. So seeking that happiness in the material world, it simply ends in misery. When we seek to serve that potency in the spiritual world, the pleasure potency, simply brings happiness to Krishna. So, these qualities are there in the spiritual world, except envy, Prabhupada said. There's no envy there in the spiritual world. There's a little bit of envy. The gopis say, how come that, you know, that bamboo flute is just a little bit of wood, but it's touching Krishna's lips all the time. They're supposed to be our property, but it's ordinary piece of wood, you can. But they get envious sometimes of the flute. But the idea is it's enhancing love for Krishna, no relationship with Krishna. So enviousness is also there in the spiritual world, and we see in Krishna's pastimes. Radharani also gets jealous. All the gopis get jealous. Like Suruchi is getting jealous of a child, so we say sometimes Radharani gets jealous, gopis get jealous, and they're very diplomatic. the different groups, trying to waylay Krishna away from the other group. There's all this intrigue going on, spying is going on, and foiling the other, counteracting the other party's moves. It seems like some kind of envy and things like that is going on. But it's actually so for the pleasure of Krishna. So if there was no what do you say? Just like Chandravali is right wing, Radharani is left wing. So in Chandravali she's many miles and this a perfect woman, you can say, that doesn't chastise Krishna so directly. Indirectly they may show, but Radharani is completely opposite. She will directly criticize, they will chastise, they will go in a half, they will go off, they don't want to see Krishna anymore. So all these moods are there in the spiritual world, but it's all for bringing Krishna happiness. In fact, he likes all this. It adds to the flavor of the Parakya Rasa. So we see also even in Krishna's wives in Dwarka, he has 16,000 wives. And just like Rukmini was given the Parijata flower, it was a heavenly flower from the heavenly planets. It wasn't available on the earth, but she was given it. So Krishna had 16,108 beautiful palaces, but only Rukmini has had this beautiful Parijata flower, scented. And all the celestial swans would come smelling the fragrance, the heavenly swans would come down, so it became very much more beautiful and attractive, her palace and her garden and everything. So Shatibam became a little bit jealous. Now she wanted one. I want a Parijata flower, she's got one like that. Co-wife, their competition is there. So then Krishna said, I'll give you a whole plant, why one flower? He takes her to meet Indra, to Indraloka. He has a battle out there and everything. Anyway, she gets the Parijata flower. Indra got angry because you cannot take, this is the heavenly flower, you cannot take it to the earthly planet. So they had a fight with Krishna. Of course, Krishna defeated him. So then she had the Parijata tree in her garden, Satyabhama. So she said, I got a Parijata. But the breeze would always come and take all the scent from the Parijata flower from her garden and blow it into Rukmini's garden. So there's always an intrigue, you know, they get the flower, but still, the co-wife has still got something more that I haven't got. Anyway, Krishna was so expert in handling his wives that when he expanded himself into 16,108, they didn't know what was happening. And they used to think, you know, Krishna likes me the best because he always stays in my house. He hardly ever leaves. So I'm the favorite. So Krishna is very expert in dealing. He can deal with any kind of situation. So they had that feeling. So it's there in the spiritual world. So then, you know, then Krishna, they're thinking he's just a hen-pecked husband because he never leaves my palace, whatever I tell him. So they're feeling satisfied like that. They've got more than their co-wives, but actually Krishna is with everyone, all of his wives enjoying the same. So anyway, these qualities reflect in the material world. They become so bad that even they want to, they kill their own children. See, of course, this is a very wonderful story of Dhruva Maharaj. Because by this being bitten by these sharp words of his stepmother, he became so angry. He was born as a Kshatriya, so that anger is naturally there. But it can really manifest even at 5 years old. So much so, he was determined to get his own back. And so the whole story of Dhruva, he goes out in the forest, he's a 5-year-old boy. He starts tolerating all the onslaughts of material nature. And then he actually sees Krishna in his meditation. He meditated on Vishnu, Krishna appears before him. And this is like, I think, 6 months or something like that. So it's such a wonderful story of how such a young boy could achieve, you know, the ultimate goal of life with just within a few months, simply by his determination. So it's he's setting a great example here. And this is why Mahaprabhu often would read this chapter. The chapter of Dhruva and Prahlad Maharaj, you know, Gadadhar Pandit, Haladini Potency. They weren't talking of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. They were discussing, so many times they would discuss the story of Dhruva, the story of Prahlad Maharaj. Because it's also showing that how Dhruva, 5-year-old boy, he said to Prahlad Maharaj also, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Nrisimhadev. So if a 5-year-old boy can do it, why can't everyone else? So this is a great inspiration for Mahaprabhu, who has come to give his service to everyone in the world. Even the small boys can take, then surely all the grown-up people, they can take to it also. So this story of Dhruva is very, very famous. His determination to understand Krishna. Although his motivation wasn't pure in the beginning, therefore Dhruva Maharaj is considered amongst the neophyte devotees. He's exalted, but he's classified because he went to the Lord for some material benefit. So, but everything turned out favorably, and then he became a pure devotee. But his intention, he wanted something material thing from the Lord. Anyway, today is also the day that Srila Prabhupada left for America. This is we can see the qualities of Dhruva and Prahlad also, the quality of determination. How determined Prabhupada was to execute the order of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It became his life's mission. So the austerity he went through, Dhruva went through austerity, but the austerity Prabhupada went through, simply to get to America, or simply even to get his visa, to get his illegal papers. So much trouble Prabhupada, he never gave up. So determined. Then at last he got his ticket. From Srimati Moriarty, with the Scindia Steamship Company, gave Prabhupada a free ticket so he could go to America. And so then Prabhupada eventually left. On this day, is this the day he left or the day he arrived? I think he left. The day he arrived, was it? Oh, okay. Anyway, he left alone. There was none of his god brothers were with him. He had one friend, kind of, wasn't so close, but anyway, a well-wisher was. But that's all. Only one with Prabhupada. None of his god brothers were there or anything like that. So he was like Dhruva, also a lone child, going into the unknown Western world, jungles. So then Prabhupada arrived, and also Prabhupada also had a darshan, like Dhruva had the darshan. He also had the darshan on the boat. Krishna was coming in his all his incarnations, and he was rowing the boat. So Prabhupada had his darshan also. And then Prabhupada composed these beautiful prayers on that Jaladuta upon arriving there. So everything about Prabhupada's life was an example. We see so many examples in his life, in his struggle. Charya means one who is set an example. So actually nobody worked harder or struggled harder or was more determined than Srila Prabhupada. Certainly I don't think anybody can come up to what Prabhupada went through to establish Krishna consciousness. Like the Pandavas, what they went through, and they were devotees, but still what they went through. So they're perfect examples. Nobody can actually do what the sufferings and tribulations they've been through. Nobody could do that, but we see the devotees do it, so then they become ideal examples. And so 5,000 years later we're glorifying the Pandavas for their. So similarly we're glorifying Prabhupada because his wonderful activities. So he's setting perfect example. And in all of his prayers he's offering to Krishna and when he's just arriving there. So deep, so much of the whole philosophy, you know, contained in how Prabhupada's expressing his sentiments. You can see all of the wonderful qualities and philosophical understandings of Krishna consciousness are being expressed by Prabhupada. He was the possessor of all those. You know, throughout those prayers, he's not ever saying, you know, I made it myself and I got on the boat and, you know, I'm fine. It's always relates everything to his Guru Maharaj, by his blessings, by Krishna's blessings. I don't have any power to speak. How they will ever understand your message without your mercy? So he was always acting, there's prayers issue, he was completely dependent on Krishna. Completely dependent. Only if you make my power of speaking suitable to their understanding, only I think then they will be able to understand the message of Vasudeva. So he prayed to Krishna, he actually got that blessing, that Prabhupada's power of speaking was suitable for our understanding. He did get that blessing because when we read Prabhupada's books, Krishna is right there, right? Immediately you read Prabhupada's books, the answer is there, Krishna just jumps out the pages. We were reading some books before, spiritual books, but you couldn't understand, right? You read so many things but you're scratching your head and it's all kind of very vague. And you hear these so-called swamis and yogis speaking. You can't really understand anything. But the moment you hear Prabhupada speak or read his books, immediately everything becomes revealed. I was in Hrishikesh and I was listening to famous swami there. You got a big ashram. Shivananda or someone. I may not even be there now anyway. Anyway, I was hearing them speak. Sounded good at the time, you know what they're saying. But afterwards, you know, couldn't really catch it, what they were saying. You couldn't really grasp what they were saying. Then later on, I met Prabhupada's ISKCON devotees, Prabhupada's. And first question I asked, why you are chanting Krishna's names and Rama's names? They were doing some Harinam. Why don't you chant, you know, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva? This is the ultimate in Hinduism, the Trinity, Rama, Vishnu, Mahesh. So why are you not chanting the names of Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh as well as Krishna? And he said, well, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I was really struck. I said, well, nobody ever told me that before. I've been hearing big swamis and things like that. Nobody ever told me God was a person before. And he was a new bhakti. He was from Australia, Malachadesh, Prabhupada called it. And probably only less than 2 years, I guess, he was in the movement because he started in Australia. the new bhakta, and he's telling me Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm hearing these swamis, you know, they're cultured, they've taken birth in India because of their pious activities. They, you know, they're cultured, they're educated, they can speak perfectly, they know that. He couldn't tell me, sannyasis. He didn't know. A new bhakta, just simply because he's associated with Prabhupada or a devotee for a little while, he knew. He knew. In one sentence, he told me more than all the big cultured swamijis could tell me. So this was the power of Prabhupada. He got, as Krishna said, you know, bhakti mama bhajananti, I can only be known through my bhakta, or bhakti. Bhakti comes through his bhakta. I can only be known by my bhakti, by my bhakta. So Prabhupada got that benediction from Krishna. And you know, now he writes his books, it's just, Krishna is right there. Everything just makes sense. So Prabhupada, in those, all those prayers, it was never anything to do with his own ability. It was always Guru Maharaj, by his grace of his Guru Maharaj, by his grace of Krishna. He was completely dependent on Krishna. And factually he was. He's got 40 rupees in his pocket. And he's getting off the ship in America. You have to be dependent on him. What else have you got? But it was, he's expressing so much in those, all those different prayers. How he wants to become an instrument of Krishna, just a puppet in Krishna's hands. So he's showing the ideal mentality of a devotee, how we should actually, the extent of that humility. So we're imbibing so many good instructions simply from Prabhupada's, by his activity alone. For him it was just a struggle to get to America, but even in his struggle he's left a wealth of understanding. If we just read his poems there, his struggle is more enlightening than all the big scholars writing volumes and volumes of books. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Na Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki. Any comments, questions? Kanagamna Prabhu.
I read recently that Prabhupada actually had several people there to see him off.
Oh.
Yeah, that Satsarupa Maharaj, I think he wrote this, that he said that, you know, he was misinformed. That one person that said he was all by himself and so forth. It's very, very poetic, he said, but it's not actually the case. There were actually about four different people there.
How many?
Four.
Four?
Different people, and I have such a poor memory, I can't remember their names or anything, but they did see him off to the, on thing. But when he arrived, he said he didn't know whether to turn right or left. He was completely alone when he came.
So three other very fortunate people got mercy of Prabhupada. Can you give Mike this one?
We are also totally indebted to Srila Prabhupada, and it's not, you know, in one hand it's not amazing that he accomplished all what he did, because he was just focused on pleasing Srila, his spiritual master and Krishna, and he's sharing the same qualities as his spiritual master and Supreme Personality of Godhead, same qualities. And what is surprising is how a 5-year-old boy, he approached the Lord. He was motivated, and what is surprising is how he achieved what he achieved. No, his what he received, the mercy he received. And I was just willing to hear a bit more how we can benefit really from Dhruva Maharaj's example, being as conditioned souls are with so many motivations.
Yeah, the the essence of this story or Dhruva Maharaj's success was that he met Narad Muni, and Narad Muni instructed him what to do. And because he followed the instructions of his guru, therefore everything was successful. He was able to meet a pure devotee and get instructions on the process of Krishna consciousness, which was meditation at that time for Dhruva. And he followed it perfectly, too perfectly, because he upset the universe by his austerity. But anyway, he followed it so perfectly, then obviously you will get the result, because he followed in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And we see that as that example Prabhupada also gave. And Prabhupada quotes that Vyasatmika Puthiya Ekiha Kurunandana Bahu Shaki Anantasya Vyasayanam verse from Bhagavad Gita 2:43, I think, something. And it's Krishna saying that those who have single-minded determination fixed on one point, it shouldn't be here and there, many bahu shaka, your intelligence shouldn't be splayed out, it should be fixed on one point. So Prabhupada said, when I read that translation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he said that one point, that single-minded determination, is fulfilling the, executing the order of the Guru. And Prabhupada showed that example also. He said, you make the order of the Guru your life and soul. And this is what Prabhupada was doing, we see, in his struggle, because his Guru Maharaj told him to do it, to preach the Western English-speaking people. So he made that order, and Prabhupada said many times, he said, if I have any success, he said, I simply try to follow the order of my spiritual master. Many times he expressed that. He gave all the credit to his spiritual master. And Prabhupada also said that I based the International Society for Krishna Consciousness on this principle, the Asatmika Bodhira Kihakuruna, that fixed determination on making the order of the Guru your life and soul. This is an example, the Acharya's example, how he established the movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, on that principle. So we take that principle and we base our individual Krishna consciousnesses on that same principle. He based the whole society on that. He said it was based on his principle. So we base our individual Krishna consciousnesses also on that same principle. We make our Guru's instruction our life and soul. Then we are following in the footsteps of the Acharya, then there's certainly success. Acharya come to show how to have success. We follow it behind him. He's our Acharya, so we follow his example. Then definitely there'll be success, because he showed, if you do like this, you'll get success. Thank you.
I don't know if I understand you. You tell the gopis they can to be envious also. Yes?
They're envious of Krishna's flute.
Ah. Entonces, to be envious is good or no?
Flute. It's flute.
Yeah.
It's touching Krishna's lips. They say they're our property. How come that bit of wood, that bit of dry wood, the holes in it also?
I can't be envious because another Maharaj is making better service than me. For Krishna.
No, that type of envy doesn't exist, Prabhupada said, in the spiritual world. You can be competitive, even Prabhupada encouraged competitiveness sometimes, but not malicious or envious like that. But in book distribution, Prabhupada started to stir it up, that competitive spirit. Oh, you've distributed so many books in your temple. You know, the Los Angeles, they distributed this much. If you can distribute more than that, I'll come to your temple. You distribute more, I'll come to your temple. So Prabhupada, it was competition was there, but it wasn't malicious or anything like that. So malicious means We had two groups one time in Mayapur. We're still here. There's many groups. But Jayapataka Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj. So one will come in on an airplane, they go have a kirtan party to meet him. So the other group said, okay, when our guru comes, we'll do that. So they would have a bigger kirtan party. So they have a bigger kirtan party. And then the next time says, well, when our Guru Maharaj comes, we'll invite the press, maybe pressmen. Then we'll do more. Okay, so they invite the press. Then the other party says, okay, we'll do something more but when our guru comes. So there was like a competition going on. So that was good. It was they're becoming enthusiastic and expanding Krishna consciousness. But then one of the parties, they said they gave wrong information to the other, you know, to the press or something like that. So when they come, then they'd be in the wrong place. There was no one there to meet them. In that, so their guru would be. But then he said, "No, then it becomes envy. When you do that, when you're malicious, you stop the other preaching. You do something against the other preaching." And then they said, "No, that becomes malicious." And they had to stop the whole thing. But if it's increasing the spirit, then Prabhupada used to, even competitiveness. In Krishna consciousness. But he said that envy as such is not found in the spiritual world, but everything else you can find it. Here's a letter from Rasa Gopika. Devidasi from Mumbai. What are the daily practice as a conditioned soul should do to develop such determination and conviction to follow the order of the spiritual master? What are the daily practices a conditioned soul should do? Obviously, your daily practice is the chanting of Hare Krishna. You want to develop all these good qualities. Prabhupada mentions in the fourth canto. Third canto, in the process of creation, and how the false ego mixes with tamagun, rajagun, satagun and produces the mind, senses, etc. like that. And then sound is produced. And then that's like the first beginning of creation, sound, and then from that comes the ether and the sense of hearing, and then everything, like the whole creation begins, air, earth, water, fire, taste, scent, etc. Prabhupada says in that purport that you see, everything in this material world, all these, they're all objects of our sense gratification, this material world. They're all these objects of sense gratification, they're all produced from sound. Because it's a subtle form, the sound is a subtle form of all the gross manifestation. So he suggests that all the objects of our sense gratification, all our material necessities are produced from sound. So similarly, when that same sound is purified, then that creates all of our spiritual necessities. So you want spiritual qualities and determination like that. It comes from sound vibration. Prabhupada said one should become convinced of this, that as these material objects, necessities have been produced from sound, when that same sound is purified by Hare Krishna, that's the pure sound, then that will actually create all of your spiritual necessities. So all these good qualities we want, we're always talking about how to become humble, how to become tolerant. But it all actually comes from this sound vibration. The holy name actually will reveal all of these wonderful qualities to a devotee. So all we have to do is serve the name properly. Chant Hare Krishna properly. And then everything will come from that. That is our daily practice. This is what your Guru Maharaj has given to you. Practically the only instruction he's given you, everyone. At the time of initiation, we get this instruction to chant Hare Krishna. We can get millions of instructions. You know, in one Bhagavatam, how many instructions could you get from that? Or to speak of all of Prabhupada's books, and we could get unlimited instructions. But what instruction does our Guru give us? He gives some negative, but the only positive instruction is one. Chant Hare Krishna 16 times daily. He may give others also, but at least everybody gets that one instruction. So, because he knows that simply that one instruction, if you can do that properly, then everything will be achieved. From stutter to prem, whatever you want, if you do that properly, it will be achieved. Another thing, it shows the implicit faith that Guru has in the holy name. He's picked us up, wretched condition from Malecha, Yavana, Swapacha, whoever, lowest, he's picked us up and said, just chant Hare Krishna. Look at the faith he has that he can deliver me, you know, a wretched person like this, just by this mantra, Hare Krishna. It's only three words. He has such implicit faith in the holy name that it can deliver me. And that's, he gives me that much. Otherwise he could give us hundreds of instructions. Implicit faith. That increases our faith when we understand how much Guru he has in the holy name. I should also have that. So Prabhupada says you have, it's an art, you have to chant. He said when you learn the art, it's easy. It becomes easy. But anyway, in the beginning we're advised simply to chant Hare Krishna and absorb our hearing in the sound vibration. That's all that's going on. Not so much stress on chanting. We should stress more here because we know how to chant. We know that, at least we know that there's 16 letters. We know what it is. And there's no hard and fast rule for chanting the holy name. So you can chant fast, slow, different dialects, whatever. There's no hard and fast rule for chanting, but there is a hard and fast rule for hearing. And that's one should be attentive when he's chanting. That's the only rule. Otherwise, there's no other, your attention should be anywhere else, it should be on the holy name. So that's the only rule. Just be attentive. So that we should concentrate more on. Being attentive to the sound bite. We all know how to chant Hare Krishna. We all know the full mantra. But are we attentive when we're hearing? So that we should, we can't concentrate on it. Because then we're not attentive. We're attentive on being attentive. But no, we should be attentive on the holy name. That's all. The definition of japa given in the Rig Veda. The mantra should be within the mind, and the mind should be within the mantra. Then you get the fruit of your japa. So in other words, you know, only the holy name is existing actually. If your mind is in the mantra, and the mantra is in the mind, it means all that's happening is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. You're not conscious of anything else, you're rapt attention in that sound vibration. That is Namaseva. That is actually how you serve the holy name. With the proper philosophical understanding before you chant the holy name, it means you should be convinced that the holy name is none different than Krishna, it's identical with Krishna. And the attitude should be approaching the holy name to serve the holy name, not that we want anything from it. Even the spiritual qualities are determination. It's not that we're approaching the holy name, we want something. The attitude should be one of service. I want to serve the holy name. So with that philosophical understanding, how Krishna is non-different name, and the service attitude, and then that complete rapt attention in the in the holy, that constitutes Nam Seva. It's our whole thing. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. It's the Yuga avatar is our deliverance, the only way, the only way. So Prabhupada said, if you do it properly, the effect will be very quick. When you master that art, he said, it becomes easy. It's an art. So you have to learn to bring the consciousness back, the attention back all the time, wherever the mind goes, due to its flickering nature, immediately bring it back again and again. And practice keeping it there. But when you practice it, Prabhupada said, when you master the art, and it's easy, then you become spiritually awakened. All these qualities will come automatically, you see. They will all be produced from the holy name. Whatever you need will be produced. In other words, the holy name is going to produce all the spiritual qualities. It's going to produce everything you need, all the necessary. It's going to produce the spiritual world. And you just enter into the spiritual world. It's going to create the whole spiritual world. The spiritual world is actually made of Hare Krishna. Because the Hare Krishna means, oh energy of the Lord, please engage me in the service of the Lord. So everybody says, oh energy of the Lord, or rather, please engage us in the service of Krishna. That's all that's happening in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is made of Hare Krishna. It's all we need. Harinam, 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 if we gave him Nastiva, Nastiva. Don't need anything else. So we have everything. Plus everything is there in the heart, you know, all those good qualities, Nitya Siddha Krishna, it's already there anyway. So what's going to clean all that? Chaito Tarapana Majanam. The holy name. That's Mahaprabhu only come to give the holy name. That is what, and he begins at that point. Krishna consciousness movement begins at this point. Chaito Tarapana Majanam. According to Mahaprabhu's Sikshastikam. So, yes, this is how we do it. All these, how can we? This is the answer for all those questions. Whatever you want to attain, it'll all come from the holy name. This is from Maya Mari, Kerala. Maya Mari, looks like. We have Maya Mari Math here, just behind Jagannath Mandir. There's one demon named Maya. Mari means death, eh? Oh, death to Maya, is it? Maya Mari, a nice name. Death to Maya, this is our Krishna consciousness. Yeah, Maya Mari Mad. Balaram had a fight with the Maya demon. If you were from the Jagannath Mandir, if you walk towards the Jalangi, there's an area, there's nothing there to mark it, but there's an area there. Maya Mari Mad. When Balaram was on pilgrimage, he came here. And the Brahman said, there's one big demon there. So Balaram took his plough and he killed that big demon. Big fight there on the bank of the Jalangi. Maya Mari Mat. From Kerala. We are always alerted to follow instructions of the spiritual master without duplicity. Could you please expand on this? Without duplicity. Yeah, duplicity means you say one thing and you do another thing. Duplicious. So, there's this demon, Baka. Bakashur. Another Bob. That bird is called Bob. He has a very long beak. Bakashur, the demon bird with the beak. He come to gobble up Krishna. Very dangerous animal. Bird. Big bird. So how did Krishna kill him? No, he bifurcated his beaks. He split them. So he's the demon who represents what? Duplicity. Two beaks, see? You say one thing, you do another. So Krishna killed that demon. Bakashura. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his must be the on his commenting on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashika. And he says, what does he say? I don't remember what he says. Anyway, he's praying. the Manasikrit, how the mind and senses, they're like highway robbers, and they're always, and liberation is like a tiger, and fame is like a prostitute's lips, and all these things. So he said, to get free from these things, to get free from duplicity, and yeah, this works. It's 100% guaranteed to work if you really want to get free from duplicity. If Maya is attacking you in any way, and you start to cater to Maya's demand, or you start to feel for it when Maya appears. Now, how to get free from that situation? You're being duplicitous. Guru told you to do one thing, you promise you do another thing, then Maya comes and you become attracted, you're becoming very duplicitous. So, Bhagavata goes, how to overcome that duplicity? He said, you call upon the name of the servant of Bakasura loudly. He didn't say you could Bakashetu. Means the killer. Shetu means killer. I think Bakashetu. He says you call upon the servant of Bakashetu. He's not saying call upon Krishna, who is the killer of the Baka demon. You need help, you're being attacked by Maya, you're feeling you're being duplicitous to your guru. So how to get out of that situation? You don't call upon Krishna for help, you call upon the servant of Krishna who kills deceit. So call upon the Vaishnava's name, loudly, very loudly. Immediately, Maya flees. Immediately, it works every time. Without fail. Huh? Bakashetu, is it? Anybody can remember? The killer of the Baka demon. So he says, call loudly upon the servant of Bakashetu, the servant of Krishna who kills this seed. He says, shout and call his holy name. It's in some, I can't remember that, but it's nice poetry also that someone made into a poem. Shout and call the holy name of the Vaishnava, your guru, your acharya, loudly, and immediately it will flee. In this, he says, in this world the only way, do whatever Sri Guru will say. On your head keep his lotus feet. Remember him in gain and defeat. This is the key to your highest success. To this fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur must confess. So he's saying you take complete shelter of the Krishna, the servant of Krishna who is the killer of deceit. call his name loudly. So whenever Maya is coming, call his name loudly. Immediately Maya goes. Immediately. It's so effective. And the test of your strength, spiritual strength, is can I chant the name of Guru loudly at that time? Or whoever I've taken shelter. Can I chant it loudly at that time? Or do I really want to entertain the thought of Maya that's just appeared in my mind? This is a test of your spiritual strength. You have a choice. You can call upon the Vaishnavas and shout his name loudly, or you can feel a little bit longer of what Maya is presenting. So why call upon the Vaishnava's name? Why not Krishna's name? Because Maya is Krishna's energy. And Maya and Krishna, when Maya makes her appearance in the mind, then thinking, she will do that all the time. But if you feel for it, thinking, feeling and willing, these three functions. If you feel for Maya, and it sounds good enough, then you will will it, you will do it. So, at that stage when Maya comes thinking, then you start to feel for it. And you will it, then Krishna will sanction it. He will sanction your entertaining Maya. He will give you a warning first. You will subconsciously, this is wrong, don't do it. Prabhupada said three warnings, I think. The Shastra says it's wrong, Guru says it's wrong. But still, you won't listen. And you want to fulfill that desire, entertain Maya. Krishna will sanction it. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. Okay. I gave you an indication to avoid it. You're not, okay, you wanna, okay, so Krishna will actually sanction it. But Guru will never sanction. He is Maya's greatest enemy. Public enemy number one. He hates, Maya hates Guru. Krishna will sanction her activity, but Guru, no, he comes to the club. Maya, immediately, she's gone like anything. You shout his name, immediately, she's very, very scared of Guru. That's his business. Maya Mari. He's come to kill Maya. Krishna's in giving her sanction to act. So she's okay with Krishna, but the devotees. Prabhupada said, Radharani, she's the chief of the devotees, she looks after the devotees. She has a club. And someone said, Prabhupada, Radharani has a club. She's the epitome of, you know, delicate femininity, and she has a big club. Prabhupada said, yes, she has a club, and she will use it on to protect the devotees. So, but therefore we take complete shelter of the devotees. It's better than taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna will sanction the Maya. Guru will never shelter. So he says, shout and call upon the Vaishnava's name. Immediately, he will, immediately Maya will go, immediately. I have experience, all the time. I mean, all the time Maya is coming. So sometimes they entertain us, but when you chant the Guru's name, you see that definitely she's off like anything. So that's how we can do it. Yes, we can serve him without duplicity. Maya will come and try to make you become duplicious according to your vows. She will come. That's her business. It's not that when one becomes even a pure devotee, that Maya gives up. Jamunacharya, he's the guru of Ramanujacharya, he's a pure devotee. What does he say? When Maya comes into my mind. It's not that when you become a pure devotee there's no more Maya. It's stepped up a little bit actually. They're waiting. Mukti and bhukti, Maya and liberation, are waiting with folded hands to serve the devotee. They're even more anxious to serve. But the devotees don't entertain. They kick them away with their feet. And still they come back, they don't leave. We'll serve the devotee, we want to serve. If you want, we're waiting ready. So it will always be there, Jamunacharya. He's thinking about it. But the willing part, what's his willing? I want to spit. That's the willing. So at the point of willing, Maya will come. It's not that you're never going to be. This is Maya's realm. This is what she's supposed to be doing. It's her service. So she will always come. But we don't feel for the thinking, feeling, willing process. As soon as she comes, Krishna says, bring it back again to the control of the self. We don't start feeling for Maya. So at that point, what we call nip it in the bud. You know that saying, English saying, you nip it in the bud. There is a flower growing. First it's like that, a rose or a lotus. Just like that shape, yeah? Nip it means you break it. It stays like that. If you leave it, it fully blossoms and develops. So at the time of thinking, when the thinking, instead, at that time you nip it. The thought is not good. If we leave it, we'll feel for it, And then we'll win it. That means it will fully blossom. So at the stage of thinking, Maya will come. But in the thinking stage, before we deal for it, we see it. It's a weed. We have to learn how to pick out the weeds that are choking the bhakti lata. You see it when it comes. Thinking point. Before you feel for it. So this is our sadhana practice. Prabhupada said one has to be trained in sadhana without going through the process of pancharachiki rule, the rules and regulations of Vedic sadhana bhakta. You won't be able to spot those weeds when they're coming out. But if you're regulated in sadhana, then you'll see the unwanted thing. It's coming, you shouldn't be there. Maya is coming to my mind. I can see it. At this time, I'm fixed in this particular service. This is something that shouldn't be here at this time. So then I can pick it out. If I'm not regulated, we can't see how things are coming in the mind and going all the time. They're going happening. If we're not regulated, we don't know what's happening. When we're regulated, we can see something is here that shouldn't be here because of my regulation. This is the sadhana. This is where we have to be very strict, and Prabhupada said, without going through the rules and regulations of sadhana, there's no question of, you know, reaching these spontaneous platform. So we have to be diligent and to search when those weeds come and spot them, and then you can pick them out. Then the bhakti lata bija will grow nicely. This is as practitioners of sadhana, this is a very important aspect, how to see the weeds, how to deal with them. If we are lax, they will grow. If we feel for them, they will grow. Then bhakti lata will be choked and we'll say, well, I'm not getting much taste in Krishna consciousness, been chanting for such a long time. Why? We weren't diligent enough in the practice. Sorry.
So, if a pure devotee, you know, to my mind, liberation is so very attractive. You know, it means freedom from all the problems, attitudes, all the distractions that the mind is already setting up. So liberation is so attractive that I, you know, not that I'm almost a pure devotee and it's going to appear before me, but if she did appear before me, you know, I'm afraid I would be very much inclined to embrace it, fall at her feet and thank her for liberating me. So how do we avoid, you know, and I'm speaking over my head, but how do we avoid temptations? How do we avoid temptations to go in the direction of bhakti and mukti and liberation, and you know, to just, as you say, abandon devotional service and go in that direction, either just for a few moments or for, you know, quote, the rest of our life or whatever. How do we avoid that temptation to get, you know, involved with Maya again, to entertain Maya? I can appreciate the sadhana is necessary, so that you understand it's wrong. But then sometimes it just seems like, gee, that would be so attractive to be liberated, something, you know, very elevated. So how does one combat that tendency to desire those things?
And my disease also.
You're much more likely to get in touch with liberation than
I. The idea is that, because it's a wonderful thing, liberation. Krishna said it's fantastic. You're seeing everything you want. Free from all, you're getting your pleasure from the self. That's how uninterested you are in material energy. Even the greatest allurements, because of that self-satisfaction, is far greater than any contact with material, and any sensation of happiness that you can get with material energy. The highest sensation is your male and female combination, but the satisfaction of being of the self is far greater than that. So blissful you can hardly stand it. And that's, you're not even doing anything, you're just enjoying yourself. So it's very, very attractive, obviously, and it's the constitution of the living entity. At least he's out of the bondage. That's definitely not his constitution. I mean, his constitution is eternal servant of Krishna, but at least he's consciously situated in the spiritual realm, in the spiritual atmosphere, so he's free from all that disturbance. It's so attractive for the jnanis. That's their sole objective. And this is just the impersonal aspect of Krishna, the effulgence of Krishna, the Brahman, aham brahmasmi. It's so attractive that the jnanis, they're willing to sacrifice their own identity. That's how attractive it is. Everybody loves himself very much, first of all. Everybody's attracted to himself. He loves himself, best of all. But even just the conception of liberation, of Brahman liberation, it's so attractive, as an aspect of Krishna, it's so attractive that jnani is willing to give up his identity and merge into it. And everybody loves their identity. It's not an easy thing to give up. But they are willing to give up even that. That's how attractive liberation is. And it's actually on the path of devotional service. And you see that actually in all forms of self-realization, they're all more or less the same. The path of sadhana bhakti and the path of jnana and the path of yoga, it's more or less the same. It's all concentrating on getting out of this material energy. This is the main aspect of the different practices of sadhana, process of self-realization, to get us out of that. So up until that point of liberation, more or less all those systems are the same. They're to get you out of this material, nice tregun babajun, rise above this material nature, these modes of material nature, and be situated in the self. So it's a good thing, and Prabhupada said at least you've contacted spirit. It's a wonderful thing. You become a saint. That is a saint. The person who's actually, we understand more, there's more, much more to a saint than a... than being liberated, but that is actually Prabhupada, he said that you become a saint, which is a very, one greatest position to be in. You're out of the material world. Of course there is saintly activities, which the Mayavadis don't have. Saintly activities means bhakti. So there's further to go, but at least they come to that platform of liberation. And it is very, very attractive and tempting. If we're in the material world, we're getting sufferings all the time. It's a fact. Adi Bhautik, Adi Devik, Adi Atmik. It's natural we would like to be in a place where there's no suffering. And under my Vaishad, we're not seeking misery. It's threefold miseries that we're not seeking that, but we're here and we're going through it. So it's natural for the soul to be seeking an under my Vaishad, be free from these miseries. But the idea is that it doesn't become our goal. We think about it and it is good, it's nice, but it doesn't become our goal. Our whole activities are not centered upon this point of getting out of material energy. Then it becomes a distraction. Then if it's our goal, then we become an jnani. We may use it, well, I want to become free from material energy, then I can perform devotional service. I can have some bandha is there, I contacted spirit, so it'll be much easier, of course it will be. But up until that time, your emphasis is going to be on a jnana or yoga to get out of that situation, into the liberated position. It'll take many, many births. So the idea is that it's attractive, but we know ultimately Krishna is more attractive. We want to enter into a relationship with Krishna. So again, it's I guess it's coming back again to the same point of doing our sadhana properly, chanting Hare Krishna properly. Then we actually get a taste, if we can develop a taste for Krishna consciousness, then that desire for liberation won't be so strong. If we're getting happiness from Krishna consciousness, then at least we're going to be relieved from the constant material sufferings that we're going through, and we're going to appreciate a taste of Krishna. You can give up the lower taste by experiencing the higher taste, Krishna says, in Krishna consciousness. So if we can develop that, which will come through our Krishna consciousness, or chanting japa, that the holy name will actually reveal that he will give a taste. But it is a natural, on our step, on the progress from Shraddha to Prema, it is a platform that we will achieve. It is there. It is there. So, and it is attractive. So, but the idea is we shouldn't make it our goal. We shouldn't. Because as long as we're concentrating on that, the subject matter is the material energy and how to get out of it. Because we haven't contacted spirit, so the subject matter must be the material energy. So the process of devotion, immediately we're supposed to concentrate on Krishna, so the subject matter is Krishna. Whether we're conditioned or liberated. And by that practice, it's when we start to get a taste, then we'll be able to give up the lower taste, even the taste for liberation. But until that time, there's going to be some, obviously, Prabhupada said, unless you've got a higher taste, how are you going to give up lower taste? So we see in our own experience, sometimes we do tend to sense gratification. We do cater for it sometimes. Sometimes we do cater for that desire to become free. But it's quite natural as long as you haven't got a taste. So the idea is that by constant the constant attention to the process of sadhana, then that will ultimately bring the taste. That's what's actually going to give us, get us out above that taste or the desire for liberation. So when we experience something a bit better. You want to comment?
It seems to, as you were speaking, and you eventually came to that position, that is about the goal that one has. So bhakti yoga, the inherent goal, the natural goal of bhakti yoga is to rejoin Krishna. So if you're passing through these stages, or liberation appears in front of you, because you already have fixed a different goal, a higher goal, it's easy to move beyond those things. So I have to reevaluate my goals and actually become, understand what the goal of all this chanting is. Jai.
Yeah, it's difficult to get rid of these. Especially if you've been influenced by, Mayavadi people and things like that and the power of liberation. It's like Sanskrit variation. We've had so much association, it's difficult to get rid of. You have association with Mayavada understanding or liberation understanding, then it's also difficult to get rid of. I got that disease also. Hare Krishna.
About this, what Prabhu said, my understanding is that if the chanting is proper, then you're not taken by all these traps like Brahman realization and all other levels of realization. Like if one during the chanting itself is properly situated, then the rest of his consciousness is an expansion of that proper chanting. Means if while you chant you are like sort of little impersonal or little tired of being in the material world and chanting as for basking in the impersonal aspect of Krishna always helps you to rest from this dimension.
Can someone translate a little bit of what she said? Otherwise I'm going to get lost. Can someone say what she said little bit by little bit? Can you then speak much louder into the microphone?
Louder. Can you hear now? Can you hear now?
No, speak a little bit louder. You have to shout.
Like this? You can hear now? About what Prabhu said, that if while we chant the holy name, during the chanting, if our consciousness is proper, then we don't get trapped by all these levels of realization. Like if the consciousness is very personal, like you see the holy name, like he's really Krishna, he's a person, then all these different levels of realization will not have effect on you. Like,
will have effect, you say?
Will not have. They will not have effect on you, because you are the, while you are chanting the holy name, you are thinking that the holy name is Krishna himself, he is a person, and you are serving that person, you are maintaining a personal relationship with him through the hearing the holy name and chanting properly. Then all these levels of realization, like Brahman realization and others, will not manifest. Like, how to... And I add a question to this. I address the question to you, that when we chant the holy name and we are doing, trying to avoid the root offense of being sleepy or being distracted or being like we avoid to be impersonal to Krishna, to the name itself. So that aspect of avoiding to be impersonal, avoiding to be inattentive to him, can you deeper explain this? Can you analyze it?
They have not come. Yeah, okay, I see. If you are thinking that Krishna is none different than his holy name, and I'm approaching in the mood of service, then the realizations won't come. Because the idea is it should be rapt attention. You shouldn't be thinking anything. Just rapt attention should be there. Then that is proper name, namasaiva. But if I'm thinking, Krishna, you are none different than your holy name, then it's not japa anymore. It becomes dhyanam. Or jnana. I'm thinking something else. It's not japa anymore. So that rapt attention has to be there. So that this is the practice, how we're learning to be completely wrapped in attention. And if there's any, if anything comes in the mind, Krishna says, you must immediately bring it back. This is the practice. So, yeah, it won't happen. In the beginning stage, the first we're, that Nam will reveal his identity as being none different than Krishna. In other words, you'll feel the presence of God. He will reveal his presence. Then you can understand that name is none different than Krishna. I'm chanting Krishna's name and I'm feeling his presence right beside me. That will come. The next revelation will be, the Nama will reveal his form. Nama Rupa is a progression. The form of Krishna, of your worshipful deity, will, Lord, will be revealed, the name will reveal it. So then you can see something. So then it's not exactly the same as rapt attention in the sound where still you're doing that, but you're visualizing. And then the holy name will reveal qualities. He will reveal his qualities, Krishna's soft voice. You can hear, you can the touch, you can smell the fragrance of his body. So it doesn't mean we should say, no, I'm supposed to be wrapped in attention, nothing should be happening at that point. No, you can relish them. That's a different stage. You can relish those things. You can relish the Krishna's qualities. And the last stage is Leela, the holy name will manifest his pastimes. And then you can enter into it and engage. So at that time also you're not, no, I can't do that, I should just be wrapped in hearing, the hearing. That's the big first stage. So when we achieve that stage, that is the namasaiva, just rapt attention with that. But the understanding that Krishna is not, that's before you start chanting. your attitude of service, in the mood of service of the Holy One. That's just before you chant. You set your, you get your understanding right. Then you chant. Then you just become absorbed. So then, after nama realization, then the other, then it's not that you have to chant and just hear the holy name. If pastimes in the Lord are appearing, then you can see these things. It's not that you say nothing else should be in my mind, so I'm gonna. No, I don't want these pastimes to appear. That's perfection. But in the beginning, we have to follow very strictly that until we get to nama realize, that's the first realization. This is Chaitodhāpana Mārcanam, this is Sambandha. So we have to go through step by step. Okay? Here's a letter from Viśvarūpa, from Ahmedabad, Viśvarūpa Prabhu ki jai. Sometimes someone says that Krishna consciousness is just a concept only. So what can be said to them? Yeah, but you can tell them it's the supreme concept. Everybody, for life, for everyone is some concept. They have some conception of life. So the supreme conception is Krishna consciousness. It's Rupa Prabhu ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhakta Bindaki, Nitai Go Premanandi. Thank you.